we going to do now?
Well, Bob, we thought we might do a real up-to-date adult western, or modern western.
Yeah, one for radio, huh?
Yeah, well, of course, we couldn't do it for TV very well on this program. But westerns have come back into their own here in the past year or two, not only for kids, but for grown-ups. And we thought we might like to present a new radio version of an adult, modern-type western called Golden Sunset on Blue Steel.
Hey, South Dakota.
What?
Did you hear about that big moving van that's coming across Route 23 this afternoon?
What time did it leave Dodge?
Oh, about 10 o'clock this morning.
What route, you say?
23. Should be due there any minute now.
Wait a minute. Use your head. He'd never take Route 23.
Why not?
Too many lights.
Well, that's right. Maybe he'd take the roundabout way through the mountains.
Well, he'd lose time, but no light.
If we left right now, we could meet him down by the Arroyo.
Look, we can take Route 33, a four-lane job. Cut him off at the pass.
No toll stations either. Come on, let's go.
Let's go.
Your gun's loaded?
It's all set. Well, what's he lugging in this big van, Ed?
Antiques. Western antiques.
Western antiques. Make a fortune on these babies out in Frisco.
Sure we will. Hey, look, up ahead there.
I was right. He took the roundabout way.
Yeah, well, now you get in as close as you can to his cab, and I'll jump from the car onto the cab and take over.
Right, now you have to climb over the cab and get into the front seat there and grab hold of the wheel.
All right.
Else that truck will run away with you.
All right, you just keep us rolling up alongside. Cover me with fire in the meantime.
All right.
Here I go.
All right, buddy. Pull over there.
So hold up, buddy. Come on, under that willow tree.
Pull over.
All right, South Dakota, let's unload. I'll keep them covered.
Get them?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at these antiques.
Boy, oh boy, what a haul this will be.
This is really something.
Come on, we got to drive.
We got to head west. Look, some dirty work up ahead.
What do you think?
I don't think so, no.
No, I don't either.
We're speaking to you now from the soundstage in Hollywood where the new motion picture All or Nothing at All is being filmed. Of course, the movie, as you probably have read, stars young Lurch McBane, a new teenage idol of America's millions. Lurch has kindly consented to give us just a moment or two to chat about the picture and himself before the climactic scene of this highly exciting film is shot. I think they're almost ready over there, Lurch. We won't take too much of your time. I would like to know just how it feels to become a star overnight.
Well, it takes a little getting used to, of course, Bob. But it's a thrill, and I'm excited. Of course, I'm just ecstatic over this wonderful vehicle they've given me here in All or Nothing at All.
I understand this is a wonderful picture, and that this scene that we're about to actually see being shot is the most exciting in the picture. Is that right?
Well, there are, of course, many high points in the movie, but as you say, this is the climactic scene.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to it. Have you noticed any change in your life since becoming such an overnight star? I mean, money-wise?
Well, of course, money is important, and when I got my first big check not too long ago,
mm-hmm.
I went right downtown, got a haircut, and had my shoe shined, and bought a shirt.
And do you find that you're behaving any differently toward your friends or family?
I think so. I think I have,
you have
a little swelled head.
Gotten a big head over the whole thing. Well, now they're calling for you over on the set, and I think that we'd better quiet down, because any moment now, the climactic scene of this motion picture, All or Nothing at All, starring Lurch McBane, will be shot, and we will hear it as it is being shot, as you will see it on your sound.
Quiet on the set! Orchestra, this is a take.
Okay, that's it. Goodbye.
Cut! Nice!
Holy, terrific, Lurch.
Terrific!
So we have seen the climactic scene of All or Nothing at All, starring Lurch McBane from the Hollywood sound set.
Wow. Now, the makers of Fenucci, the greatest name in fudge, brings you another episode of One Feller's Family. Today's episode, entitled Afternoon Event, was taken from Book 5, Chapter IX, pages 12 through 13. It's shortly after noon as we look in on the family today, and we find father and mother standing.
Teddy?
Yes?
Have you seen another red checker man? I seem to be one short here.
No, of course, I've never played those checkers. Yes, you probably have dropped it somewhere. Well, couldn't you improvise? You could put something down there. Cookie, maybe.
Yes.
Chocolate mint.
It should be a red cookie.
Do you have any red cookies? We don't have red cookies.
Yes. Well, do you have any red mints? Cinnamon would do.
Sometimes you exasperate me. There you sit, playing that game all by yourself.
Yes,
you
yes.
always win.
Yes. Well, one way or the other, Sandy.
Well, I know.
Either I win or my opponent, who is me, wins.
Well, I know, but what fun is there in that?
Yes, I try to outwit myself.
Do you succeed?
Seldom.
Well, that's encouraging.
Well, ever since Jack's news, the house hasn't been quite the same. Ever since Jack's news, the house hasn't been quite the same.
Yes, but I'm trying to write a note. If you want to talk to yourself, well, why don't you go into another room, or at least don't expect an answer.
Who are you writing the note to, Fanny?
The daughter.
Claudia?
Yes.
Where is she now?
India.
In India?
Mm-hmm.
When did she go over there?
Oh, must be 3 years ago.
Was I told about it, Fanny?
Well, of course you said goodbye.
Some sort of foolishness this is.
You've been listening to One Fella's Family, brought to you by Panucci, the greatest name in fudge. Today's episode, entitled Afternoon Event, was taken from Book 5, Chapter IX, pages 12 through 13. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messy. This is a Messy production.
Now, though, I think we have something other or something more important to take care of, don't we?
What would that be?
We'll talk with this gentleman for a while.
What is he?
I am, yes. I was told to come right up here by Mr. Wilbur Connolly.
Oh, the young squirt who works for us, old. Come on in and sit down.
He looks old, that young squirt.
Well, he's aged.
He looks like he worries a lot.
Mm-hmm. What is that, a pirate's hat you're wearing?
Yes, it is, a pirate's hat.
And, the patch over your eye. You have a cutlass there, too.
That's right.
You're dressed as a pirate, in other words.
I'm dressed as a pirate.
What do you call those pants? Doubloons that you're wearing?
No, doubloons is money.
Oh.
It's gold money.
Uh-huh.
Pantaloons.
Uh-huh.
These are pantaloons.
Do you,
But doubloons you put in your pantaloons.
Do you find that you're holding a balloon there, too, aren't you?
I am, and I'm a little loony.
Do you find that pirating in these days is,
Well, I'm not a real pirate. I don't want you to get that idea. I just advertise a pirate shop that I own here in New York on Fifth Avenue. Being pirate.
Well, how many would you say in the course of a year's time want to turn to piracy as a means of livelihood?
Oh, I think several. It's just that they lack the courage and the know-how. I think also they don't realize that there's a store where they can equip themselves, and we have books on the subject. I think if people knew that this store, this service was available to them, they'd avail themselves of it.
Well, I think
period.
A very good point there.
Well, I think so.
Do you sell talking parrots and things to pirates to carry on their shoulder?
That's right.
And treasure chests? Treasure maps? Do you have those?
We have phony treasure maps that will send people off to the West Indies, down at the Caribbean, in search of pirate treasure.
But there's no treasure there.
As far as we know, there isn't. No, but it gives a fellow a sense of belonging, a sense of importance that we all need.
Well, thanks very much. I notice they're coming for you there. I can see through the glass door.
Oh, yes, I'm coming. Yes.
So, lots of luck with your job.
I'm coming.
And there he goes. Back to his store.
Singing guards.
I don't think he'll be in business long.
No, I don't either.
Well, it's our song-saying session time again. And here, of course, with another number to rend is Natalie Tired.
Number to what?
To render.
Well, had me frightened there. Hello there, everybody, and how are you, Blue Eyes?
Say, I understand that you've been planning a tour, that you're going cross-country hopping, is that right?
You know what I've just noticed, Bob? You look like Gene Raymond.
Well, you're the first one who's ever told me that.
And you do, and your partner looks like Jeanette McDonald, I think.
What's that, Eddie?
Very funny, lady.
Eddie, have a... don't take any offense. She's just trying to add a little note of humor. Eddie has a particular set of drums there this week, is it?
Yes, Eddie. Maybe you could come over and explain it to Bob and Ray, just what these drums are and what you plan to do. Well, come over on the microphone.
The bongos, for the main part.
The what?
Bongos.
Yeah.
I got them from some cats in South Africa on a tour I was on a while back.
Don't confuse them with that cool talk.
Well, I figure, this will fit pretty good, you know? I mean...
You mean it's...
It's way out.
It's way out there.
That's right.
You mean musically.
I earned the title of King of the Big Beat for nothing.
That's right. That's a new title. That,
what's that?
Eddie, King of the Big Beat.
Oh. Well, then this is going to be a different sound we'll get today.
I think so, but I think you'll enjoy it.
All right.
It'll be a welcome change. It's the delightful hit song, Tammy.
All right, Eddie.
I hear the cottonwoods whispering above. Tammy, Tammy. Tammy's my love.
Go, old lady.
The old hoot and the owl, hooty hoos to the dove. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. Does my darling feel what I feel when he comes here? My heart beats so joyfully you'd think that he could hear. Wish I knew if he knew what I'm dreaming of. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's my love.
Real cool, Grandma.
Wait, okay, Eddie. I don't know whether the asides help out.
What was he yelling? I couldn't hear.
Well, it's some rather uncomplimentary thing. I think you better listen to a tape of this after you
get
off.
What did you yell, Eddie?
Huh?
What did you...
You said, go, old lady.
Go, old lady.
Grandma.
Will you have
no,
some
I don't
nerve?
That, I don't think this is a time or a place for an argument. Why don't you...
Punch you, silly.
Why don't you get busy with another song for next week, and until then, say...
Won't you say a song this week?
Time again, ladies, for another of Aunt Penny's true-to-life stories. And this is your friend Danny and Aunt Penny's sunlit kitchen, all set to hear today's story. And Aunt Penny, what is that you just baked there? It looks delicious.
Raisin cookies, Danny, and they're just lovely.
Do you mind if I try one while I sit back to listen to today's story?
Well, you certainly can, and that's one thing about these cookies, ladies. As with anything made with chicken fat, it's completely digestible.
Oh, Aunt Penny is right, ladies. You know that whenever you use chicken fat and you're baking or deep frying, you're really deep frying and baking.
That's right, and it is so digestible. They don't sit in your stomach like a half dollar piece.
I'm going to have a couple more of these raisin cookies, Aunt Penny, while you tell us what today's story is all about.
Why don't you have some cookies, Danny, and I'll tell all the folks about today's story and what it's all about.
Is that sunlight filtering through the Venetian blind too strongly in your face, Aunt Penny?
No, but doesn't it show how spotless our kitchens are
here,
Yes,
Danny? And how light and golden brown those raisin cookies are, too.
Aren't they wonderful?
They are delicious. There's
well, Danny, you can help yourself to these and eat as many as you want, because if it's in chicken fat, it's digestible.
Well, now, what's today's story about, Aunt Penny?
Today's story...
I'm just going to have one more cookie.
Why don't you, Danny? Help yourself. That's what I say to all my friends. When you do cooking, if you cook with chicken fat, you'll find that it is digestible. And the things you cook with chicken fat won't sit in your stomach like a stopwatch.
That's right. Don't forget Aunt Penny's famous words, ladies. Help yourself. And now, Aunt Penny, today's story...
Today's story, Danny, is about two retired folks who live in a small town in New England. And the story concerns a Mr. and Mrs. Eugene Spatz.
And what happens to Mr. and Mrs. Spatz, Aunt Penny?
Well, Mr. Eugene Spatz, for many years, was a trusted employee of a bank in Boston. After he had accumulated enough money... He decided to retire in the northern part of New England.
In Metropole, Aunt Penny?
In Metropole?
No. Why don't you dry up now, Danny?
All right, Aunt Penny. Let's get to the story.
So they decided to retire. And they went to a small town in New Hampshire. Well, that was only the beginning of their troubles, because...
Well, here's a small town in New Hampshire, Ms. Spatz.
Going to retire here?
Looks like as good a place as any.
Well, all right. Let's pull up.
First, we'll have to go to a real estate office, I guess, and see what's available. Got all our life savings there in the glove compartment of the car.
That's right. So maybe one of us had best sit in the car.
Good idea, Miss Spatz.
I'll sit here and you go on in.
All right. Oh, Miss Spatz?
Yes?
Go on in where? We're parked right out on the highway here. No buildings around.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
It confuses me to think.
Well, it kind of threw me a curve, too, Miss Spatz.
See, we were all set to retire so nicely.
Maybe better drive right on into Metropole and... and see what's available in the way.
Wasn't that car going speedy? That was going like 60, I declare.
At least that.
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's go.
Danny, I'll have to stop now.
Oh, you mean the story's over?
Yes,
Diane
this
Penny?
Could very well turn into a half hour, and we don't have that much time.
Don't you ladies forget what Aunt Penny always says. Help yourself.
Help yourself, because if it's in chicken fat, it is.
Now, around the corner and up your street comes Charles, your homely poet-philosopher, with poems of yesterday and today taken from his dusty manuscripts. Poems of romance, of adventure, and of American life. Now, here is Charles.
Hello again, everyone. Do you remember back so long ago? You and I walked hand in hand, and I looked into your eyes, and you looked into mine. And I knew then that this was the one true love for me. And we walked on. And the smell of the salt air. And watching the ocean.
I can't go on.
All right. Listen next time when once again Charles, your homely poet-philosopher, will be coming around the corner and down your street with another sheaf of old and dusty poets. Have you ever stopped to wonder what your favorite time of day is? Well, we thought that maybe one or two people here who are visiting today would have some views on the subject, and so we're going to ask them. And we'll start right here on the end with this gentleman, whose name is what?
Yes.
Sir, have you ever thought about this question? What is your favorite time of day?
Sure. 2:20.
Why is that? Something happened in your life that stands out as a particularly happy occasion? Something that... maybe means a lot to you as having taken place?
No, I used to like 1:50 a lot.
Well, why did you change?
Well, I don't know. Last 3 or 4 years, 2:20 has just kind of appealed to me more.
All right, well, you chalk up 2:20 on the big board there, and we'll be taking our poll of votes a little bit later. How about a lady? Your name is what?
My name is... Want me to spell it out because it's so hard to pronounce?
Yeah, you might as well.
Maybe B-E-T-H, Beth.
That's your first name?
Yes. Danielson's my last name.
All right.
And... D-A-N-I-E-L-S-O-N.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ms. or Ms. Danielson?
Ms.
And what do you do besides keep Mr. Danielson happy?
There's no Mr. Danielson.
All right. Have you ever thought about a particular time of day that was a favorite of yours?
Oh, yes.
The gentleman just prior to your appearance here said 2:20.
Mm-hmm.
What would your view be?
8:45.
Why is that, ma'am?
Well, I just like when the hands of the clock are like that.
Well, the same way at 3:15.
No, they're not either. It's
well,
on the other side
opposite,
of the clock.
Yes, but it's they're both together there. It's at 12 o'clock or 6:30, too.
Well, you just asked me.
Not
you don't want me to argue about it.
No.
I just want to tell you my favorite time, 8:45.
All right.
For years, I was very, very pleased with 4:10.
That is a very nice time. Any reason for stopping your fondness for that?
No, it's like the other gentleman, after a period of years, I don't know.
Just get sick of that.
I just get sick of that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And if you'll put her favorite time up on the board, 8:45, please. That's fine. And our time to say...
How do you make a mind?
Back inside. No, it's... Let's see. Eating time, huh?
That's right, Walton.
Tony?
That's right, Walton.
What are all the nice folks going to have to enjoy now? We take time up.
Well, we have one half an eclair for everyone here, Walton.
Half an eclair, huh?
Right, Walton.
What kind is it? Chocolate?
Chocolate, Walton. Oh. Custard filling, Walton.
Delicious.
Some of them don't have filling in the one half, Walton.
Oh, those were the seconds they sent over.
That's right, Walton.
Remember hearing about that, huh? Those are good. What else we got?
There are bakery rejects, Walton, most of them. We have an artichoke heart for everybody here, Walton.
An artichoke heart. Those are wonderful.
Pickled, Walton.
Pickled. We have, what is this over here? A slice of lime?
What's that, all?
Is this a slice of lime I see on the paper?
Oh, that's bologna, all.
Well, who's put it up here?
Well, I didn't do it, all.
Oh, gee whiz. I don't know these little backstage jokes, huh?
That's right, all.
Get the man who left that up here, will you?
All right, all.
And let's see, we got something to drink here, haven't we?
That's right, water, all.
All right. And you folks be careful with your papers, will you? That the food comes in, sure you throw them in the wastebasket on your way out. Save us a lot of work.
That's right, all.
A pair of socks, courtesy Wibbly Webster, for everybody.
They're baseball socks, all for this week.
Baseball socks. Huh?
That's right, Arthur. Just a strap that goes under the instep, Arthur.
It's all right.
No heels or toes, Arthur.
That's pretty good. All right. Hand a little paper bag that says I just came from...
That's right, Arthur.
Take it home, then. Okay, well, let's get on with the show, then, and see what's next. One of the most unusual personages that our Bob and Ray vast staff has come up with, probably in the last 5 years... is seated here on the table with me now, a gentleman from Lansing, Michigan, I believe, whose name is Mr. Prentice L. Wilson. Mr. Wilson, will you say hello?
How do you do, everybody?
And I might explain that Mr. Wilson is the shortest man that our staff has ever uncovered, standing in his stocking feet, in their cute little socks, too, about 11 inches. Is that right, sir?
Now, let me hasten to caution you that I am not what you might call an oddity, in that I don't like to make a show of myself.
I understand that...
Referring to my cute little stockings...
Yes.
...will only hold me up to ridicule.
I wasn't trying
I'll
to
treat you as a gentleman. I trust it's reciprocated.
Standing as you do, 11 inches... I think you're just slightly short of 11 inches, isn't that true? Present some problems to you, and I think our listeners would like to know, aside from the fact that, well, for instance, you have to sit here on the edge of the ashtray on our broadcasting table to reach the microphone. Are there any other things that complicate your daily life, Mr. Wilson?
I have runways set up in my home, excuse me, so that I can go from room to room or visit with people who are paying attention.
You do entertain quite frequently, do you, sir?
Yes, of course, in my business, it's practically essential.
Sure.
So I have these runways through the living room, dining room, butler's
pantry,
kitchen.
I believe you told me before the show that you had one up to the bar, is that right?
That's right.
What's your recipe, let's say, for a good, a good Manhattan?
Well, a good Manhattan, I...
For yourself, I mean...
Myself. Mm. I'd take 1/3 a thimbleful of sweet vermouth, then just a dash of dry vermouth, and then a complete thimbleful of... you know what?
Uh-huh.
And a dash of, not a dash, actually, a spray of bitters.
What kind of, like 2 cc's or something?
Or it'd be less than that.
Less than that. Wilson, a very big thank you for dropping by. I notice all of the communicators are highly interested in yourself. And we want to thank you for taking the time out to drop
I might here. Point out that I don't usually go on the air to be interviewed in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you'd point out that I don't want to hear from any of the listeners.
All right, fine, sure.
The mail only embarrasses me and the missus.
All right, fine. And there he goes, walking to the other end of the desk in his little half-inch shoes.
Cut off that little half-inch stuff.
Fred is L. Wilson, gentleman 11 inches tall, and our guest here at this time. Now back inside.
We just received word that things are beginning to pop over at the Gourmet Club. So, with that note, we take you over there now to our two correspondents, Clarence and Fred.
Mrs. Clarence here at the Gourmet Club as the festivities get underway. In the background, you may hear some of the society-type entertainment music, which is a new feature of the Gourmet Club. And many of the celebs who are gathered here are enjoying it.
Looking about the room, I notice several prominent people from radio and the TV.
Isn't that Dick Dandy over there?
Yes. Also, I notice at one table, Mario Leo exchanging notes with Mickey Rooney.
Quite a few Hollywood and television personalities are in town for the opening of the Gourmet Club. And, of course, discussing sandwiches here, as is the usual custom.
Hello, isn't that Roy Rogers and Dale Evans?
Yes, and over there I see Buster Crabbe with some other of the Western stars of Hollywood. I hope I pronounced that right. But now the doors...
Yes, it is Buster.
The doors of the Gourmet Club are swinging open. The pages with their trumpets, just a moment, will sound the fanfare signaling the arrival of a famous person's sandwich.
And the uniformed page is now taking the sandwich down the center aisle, atop a purple pillow with fringe, brought up here to the dais where it will be opened and described to the listening public.
Lovely assistant, Elaine, is handing up the sandwich. Thank you, Elaine. To the dais. And we will open it now as the hush falls over the attending crowd.
It is the sandwich of Art Linkletter.
The people are funny men. Art Linkletter's sandwich being opened here on the dais, I believe, if my memory serves me, for the second time in Gourmet Club history. We have observe the sandwich now. It's white bread, not cut into sections.
Now it is a solid slab, two slices of bread. The filling is Romani-type lettuce, or romaine, as it's called at the vegetable store. That's the limp type that seems to fall.
And a generous slice of rare roast beef.
Congratulations, Art Linkletter.
Salt and pepper. Another round of applause from the audience.
Not as generous a round as we might expect, but it is the opening of the Gourmet Club, and the members are not in the full swing yet.
Our congratulations and thanks to Art Linkletter for playing our radio game. And now back as the entertainment begins.
I'm out now for just a few moments to chat with the tour passing by, seeing behind the scenes in radio. There's one coming up the hall now. Oh, I'm afraid we've hit that one. Yes, I can see them now as they come up in front of the window. Sergeant, could we talk with some of your...
Speak right up now. What do you want?
We wanted to talk with some of the people in the tour here. You're still with the company,
just
eh?
Tour, teach.
I notice they all have pails and...
Hand salute. Two.
What's the idea of the pails there?
They're going to scrub the glass windows here now. I've been noticing that they get a lot of fingerprints here, and the tour needs a little work.
Well, that's right. I noticed the window was, but that's a job for...
All right, Joel, know how to clean glass, I hope.
You really shouldn't ask a tour.
Because you're going to stay here until this glass is spotless.
These people are paid to see behind the scenes in radio. They
odd numbered ones have pelts. Even numbered ones have squeegees.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's almost more than
you
can imagine.
You tune out at the end and sponges, right?
Almost more than you can believe to see this page.
Fall out.
Our guide, as he stands outside the great window here and directs the window washing operation.
Keep going.
Nearly everyone in the tour
has
an unhappy expression on his face.